Hello, everybody, and welcome to Andy Loves Movies. Formerly, I fucking love this movie. Rebranding the show. It's still going to be the same kind of concept and whatnot. I'm just changing the name. I feel I fucking love this movie is a little too extreme and kind of in your face. Doesn't really suit me personally. You know, I'm just kind of a quiet, shy person, you know, and I fucking love this movie. While I loved the show title, felt like it was like in your face and extreme and raw, and I'm totally not like that. I'm just a dude who loves movies, and this is a vanity project for me. So I was like, you know what, I'm gonna put my name on it. And I understand that your name, Loves Whatever, is not an original title for a show or whatever, but I'm not going for originality here. I'm going for passion, and like I said, this is a vanity project for me. So welcome to Andy Loves Movies. The old episodes from I Fucking Love This Movie will still be up. I'm not completely deleting my history. So if you're a new listener, welcome. If you're a returning listener, thanks for coming back. And like I said, if you're a new listener, I highly recommend checking out the old episodes because the format's going to stay the same. Just the show name's different. Before I get started, I'd like to dedicate this rebrand and this episode to a family friend. I unfortunately lost some months back to cancer. I met this woman when I was 10 years old. She was my dad's best friend. She's been my dad's best friend since the third grade. And I met her when I was 10 years old, and immediately she took me in and treated me like I was one of her own. I like to dedicate this episode to Lori. Lori, we all love you. We all miss you. And this one's for you. To kick off this rebrand, I've got 36 years of movies. So what I did was from May 14th, 1987 to May 14th, 2023, I picked one movie a year for each year I've been alive. Not an original concept. I saw it on YouTube, but I figured it'd be a great way to rebrand, to kick off this rebrand. And I always try to do like a birthday themed podcast during my birthday, which was May 14th. And I couldn't do that because I was in Las Vegas attending the Sick New World Festival. So let's get started. So 1987 about had five movies for that year, but I kind of wanted to follow rules on this. So I picked one movie for each year, although there is one year I picked two, and I'll explain that when we get to that year. So the movie I picked for 1987 is the Ritchie Valens biopic La Bamba. I remember my dad had the movie poster for this at his old practice space with his old band, and I was always intrigued by it. You know, I mean, we're always intrigued by what our parents think is cool. And obviously this, whatever this was cool because my dad had it hanging up in his practice space. So I remember I always asked him, I was like, what was that poster with that guy with the guitar? I mean, it was right by you. And he's like, oh, it's for this movie La Bamba. I was like, oh, what's La Bamba? And he's like, it's about this guy named Ritchie Valens. He was killed in a plane crash. And he's like, you know what? Fuck it. Just watch the movie. So I was probably like 7 or 8. And he throws me like a dubbed from HBO VHS copy of it. And I was just like, this is amazing. And like, even at such a young age, I knew how important the story and music of Ritchie Valens was, because he was one of the pioneers, the forefathers, if you will, of rock and roll. I mean, you know, there was Elvis, but we also had Jerry Lee Lewis, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, the Big Bopper, Buddy Holly, Eddie Cochran. I mean, the list goes on. And you know, Ritchie Valens is, like I said, one of the forefathers of rock and roll. I highly recommend watching this movie if you haven't seen it. The good folks at Criterion is releasing it, I think, in September, August or September, one of them, on Blu-ray. I need the upgrade. It's funny because I used to watch, I probably wore that VHS tape out, and then I bought it on DVD, and I needed it on Blu-ray. And Los Lobos did an amazing job covering Ritchie Valens songs. I absolutely love that soundtrack. I own it on every format. And props to Brian Setzer. His cover of Summertime Blues is my all-time favorite. I think it's the best cover of that song. And I know a lot of Who and Blue Cheer fans are going to argue with me on that one. But we'll save that for another day. Moving on, we got 1988. And I went with Big. I had a grandmother that lived in Lexington. And I remember in her TV room, she didn't have that many videotapes. And the two that my brother and I would always watch would be Big and Forrest Gump. Grandma Helen was a huge Tom Hanks fan. And I just thought it was an awesome movie. I mean, like, you know, we were all kids, and at one point we'd be like, we want to be adults so we can do adult things. And finally there was this movie that was about it, and you kind of come to realize that being an adult sucks. And I mean, when we become adults, it just becomes the opposite when you're watching this movie. It's like, damn, I'd love to be 13 years old again. And props to Tom Hanks. That's when I knew Tom Hanks was a great actor. His take on a 13-year-old, I just thought was amazing. I took an acting class in high school, and I learned a lot about the craft of acting in the 2 years I took this class. So, I mean, after I took this class and had that information given to me, I look at movies differently now. And that was one of the first ones I remember looking differently. 1989, definitely going to be a controversial one. The Punisher. Yes, I am talking about the Dolph Lundgren Punisher. My dad had an NES growing up, and he had the Nintendo cartridge case. And I remember opening it, and he had the Punisher game, which is one of my all-time favorite NES games, original NES games. And he somehow kept the booklet with that one. I was like, oh, shit. So, which was rare. Like, I knew nobody that had the booklets for their NES games. It was always, they'd get it, they'd throw the box out, and they put it in the carrying case, the Nintendo carrying case. So I looked at it, and I remember in the back of the instruction manual, there was a picture of Dolph Lundgren in this greasy black hair in front of a motorcycle, and had this really cool-ass Punisher logo, and it said, now available on video cassette. And I was like, dude, did they make a movie? He's like, yeah. He's like, it's all right. It's not great. I was like, as you can see, they didn't do the, they didn't let have him wear the skull t-shirt. And I remember years later when DVDs were on the market, the cheapest DVD you could buy back in 2000 was like $10. And I remember the Punisher being $10 because I think it was a Artisan home video release, and they were like, they had cheap DVDs, and it was great. Their selection was pretty good, too. I think they ended up becoming Lionsgate. So I bought it, and I watched it. I was like, this is fucking incredible. I mean, it was like a gritty grindhouse exploitation take on the Punisher. And I was always wondering, too. I was like, does he ever wear the skull shirt or, like, the flak jacket? And he doesn't. The only time you see the skull is when he, like, uses his knives, and he never uses the same weapon twice, which I thought was fucking genius. I thought it was great. I mean, the Punisher taking on the Yakuza, oh my god, it's great. I highly recommend it. I know it's not like cool and flashy like the Marvel movies of today, but like I think it's genius. I absolutely love it. One of my all-time favorite comic book movies. And yes, I did like the Thomas Jane Punisher. I thought that was good. What was the next one? Warzone. I thought that was pretty good. That was way, like, too comic booky, but it was great. It suited the story very well. Wasn't a fan of the Netflix one, I have to say. 1990, Pump Up the Volume. Pump Up the Volume's great. I remember watching that on cable a lot. I need to rewatch that again. It's been a really long time. I identified with Christian Slater's character so much. I mean, he was this quiet kid at school, and then, you know, after school, and, you know, in the evening, he was like this shock jock, Hard on Harry, or Harry Hard on, or something. I forget the name. You would think that I love this movie. You would think I would remember characters' names, but I have a hard time sometimes. Great movie. I mean, New Line back in the day did some pretty innovative shit. I mean, you knew they were going somewhere when they were releasing the John Waters films. I mean, you knew Nightmare on Elm Street, The Player, that's a great film. And Pump Up the Volume is no exception. Great film. That pairs really well with The Legend of Billie Jean. I rewatched that last year, and I had only seen it once, which Christian Slater's also in. And fun fact, Christian Slater and Helen Slater are not related. I learned that several years ago. But it's just kind of like these social movement movies that, you know, you got to think, these movies were made, well, Pump Up the Volume was made in 90, and then The Legend of Billie Jean was made in 1985, and they were kind of foreshadowing what was to come, these big social movements. I mean, we have social media for that shit. You know, I mean, Pump Up the Volume was, you know, about exposing the evils of public school and, you know, encouraging people to be themselves and fuck authority. And then, you know, the legend Billie Jean was just like, you know, fair is fair. You know, and I'm surprised that movie has not been remade, because I could just see that being like the hashtag, you know. And the legend of Billie Jean's kind of like a morality tale, but it's just they were on the run. I don't know, you know. But anyway, 1990, pump up the volume. 1991, Disney's The Rocketeer. I didn't grow up in a big Disney household. My dad, I don't think, watched a whole lot of Disney movies growing up. And fun fact, my grandparents managed the theater here in town from the 70s to like the mid 80s. So whatever was playing at the theater in town, my dad seen, except for The Exorcist. I was like, they actually took you to that? He goes, they did, but I had to sit in the lobby. I couldn't go in the projection room with your grandpa, and I couldn't take a peek in the curtains. I was like, damn. I was like, then how, like, I imagine it was loud. He's like, oh, I heard shit. He's just, I just couldn't see it. So I was not raised a big Disney guy, even on home video. You know, I didn't watch a whole lot of Disney growing up. I don't think I got into Disney until Toy Story came out. And with that movie, I could relate to it because A, the main character's name's Andy. And then B, you know, I played with toys. I was a huge action figure kid. So, and it kind of weirds like fellow movie, you know, aficionados, nerds out that I'm not this big Disney guy. But anyway, but my dad did take me to go see The Rocketeer. And for me, it's probably the best live-action movie Disney's ever done. It's my all-time favorite. I mean, Tron's no slouch, but, like, The Rocketeer. And it was a pretty ballsy movie for Disney to do. Because at that point, and for hardcore Disney nerds, please correct me if I'm wrong, they didn't dabble a whole lot in, like, live-action movies. Like, theatrical. Because they hadn't had success with them. You know, Tron had bombed at the box, didn't do well. And then prior to that, they did The Black Hole, which didn't do well, which is funny because The Black Hole came out of like the whole Star Wars thing. A lot of these studios rejected Star Wars. And when Star Wars became this massive hit, every studio that rejected Star Wars did their version of Star Wars. You know, Paramount resurrected Star Trek. Universal did Battlestar Galactica. And Disney did The Black Hole, and that movie bombed at the box office. And then they did Tron, which wasn't a huge success. So they just stayed cleared from live-action movies for the longest time. And then finally, they were like, you know, we're going to do this Rocketeer movie. The guy directing it was one of the special effects guys, Joe Johnson. He was one of the special effects guys on Star Wars, I think the original trilogy. And they're like, this is going to be huge. And it, like I said, it was a pretty ballsy movie because, you know, it was a Disney movie and there was Nazis in it. And that was something that, like, they didn't, that was a taboo subject, you know, rightfully so. I mean, Disney's family, you know, oriented entertainment, you know, and Nazis aren't exactly family oriented. So I just thought the movie was awesome. I mean, fucking Bill Campbell, Rocket Pack, the fucking leather jacket, that fucking cool ass helmet. Like, what more can I say? It's just an amazing film. I need to watch this again, but I remember seeing it in the theater and just being blown away. Pairs really nicely with the Dick Tracy film adaptation, which I think is amazing. So, 92 was a tough year. You know, there was all these great movies that was released. Army of Darkness, which I didn't see till much later on. Batman Returns was one. And I remember my parents taking me to go see that in the theater. And even at 5 years old, I was like, this is not a kid's movie, but it's great. So the movie I picked for 1992 is Terminator 2. And for me, Terminator 2 is one of the best movies that's ever been made. You know, just how it was made, the special effects, the execution of the story. It's just an amazing film. And that was a movie I didn't see for a really long time. My parents didn't go take me to the theaters to go see that. They're like, it's rated R, you're fucking mine, you're five. But they did let me play with the toys, which is funny because back in the day, a rated R movie could have a toy line. And Terminator had like a really cool toy line. I remember like I had the John Connor with the dirt bike, damaged, you know, Terminator. I remember this one toy where you could take the skeleton and put it in like Play-Doh and mold it to like look like Arnold and then like tear it off piece by piece. I always wanted that one, but I never got it. So yeah. I remember I really got into it when I got a DVD player, the movie, and I got the Ultimate Edition, which I still own. And three cuts of Terminator 2, which is mind-blowing to me. I mean, there was the theatrical, the special edition, and then this alternate version that you could only access if you knew the code. I miss DVD Easter eggs so much. And yeah. And also another thing with Terminator 2 is no matter what format you watch it on, the movie still looks good. You know, VHS, I imagine the Laserdisc looks good. I don't have it on Laserdisc, unfortunately. I need to get it on Laserdisc. DVD, Blu-ray, the 4K, you know, gets criticized quite a bit, but I thought it looked pretty good. And just, it still holds up. And it has, and it's aged wonderfully. You know, you watch that movie and you don't think, oh, 1992, this looks dated. It does not look dated. Just a killer, killer film. And 1993, I got another Arnold movie, Last Action Hero. Still had another movie with a killer toy line, although I didn't get any of the toys from it. I had this like unspoken rule, which I broke with Terminator 2 when I was a kid. If I couldn't see the movie, I didn't buy the toys from the movie because I was like, what's the point? Like, I don't know what the plot. For some reason, the plot mattered to me when it came to like playing with action figures, but still had a killer toy line. I remember when the movie came out because I remember the trailer being everywhere. I remember the Burger King promotion where you could get the cups, the 3D cups that moved when you turn the cup. The AC/DC song Big Gun, I remember that. And then the Def Leppard, Two Steps Behind. You know, my dad's a huge Def Leppard fan, so of course I heard it. And apparently Jurassic Park was released the same year. I do not remember Jurassic Park at all. I didn't see that in the theater. Neither one of my parents had any interest in that movie, so I never went to go see it. But I do remember Last Action Hero. I just remember going to school, everybody's like, oh, man, Jurassic Park's cool. I'm a T-Rex. And I'm like, fuck Jurassic Park. What about Last Action Hero? Big Gun, number one. And the movie didn't do well. The movie bombed at the box office. Honestly, though, Last Action Hero was way ahead of its time. I mean, you have Arnold, who's this juggernaut, you know, the biggest, you know, action movie star in the world, kind of taking the piss on his own career. And it just like went over people's heads. They're like, is he serious? Does he hate what he does? Is he just like making fun of himself? What's going on here? Now people get it. But back in 93, it was a whole different story. And killer soundtrack, AC/DC, Def Leppard, Alice in Chains, Megadeth, Angry Again, Queensryche's on it. I think Last Time in Paris. I think that's the song. I'm not too sure. I do own that. 94, I did break the rule. I have two movies for this year. I couldn't choose just one of these movies. So the first one's Airheads. I don't really need to go in why I love that movie. I did an entire episode about it. Please check that out if you haven't already. Probably my best episode so far. I was joined by my brother who might love that movie more than me. The other movie, however, is The Professional, or for us sophisticated film nerds, Leon the Professional. The Professional is one of those movies that was always on USA, it seemed like. And it was a movie that I could never catch at the beginning. And I knew well enough at a young age that if you caught a movie 20, 45 minutes in, it was not worth watching because you were probably missing some big plot points. So it's just like, why bother? But I remember one day I was watching the TV Guide channel and or network, whatever the fuck it was called. Yeah, I'm showing my age right now. And you can tell that I grew up in a house with basic cable, not a house with a cable box where you could just hit the menu button and just scroll at your own leisure. And I seen it was going to be on USA in like a half hour. I was like, I'm going to watch this movie. Everybody's been talking about it. And I remember seeing the trailer for it, I think a couple years prior to me actually sitting and watching it. And I watched it and I was like, this is fucking amazing. And at such a young age, I was like, it has such a European aesthetic to it. Little did I know the guy who directed it, Luc Besson, is French. And then I bought it on videotape. And then, you know, during the dawn of like cable DSL internet, which was a huge deal, and it was a total game changer from dial-up internet. We had cable internet at my mom's house. And I remember everybody would go to bed and I would sit at the gateway computer, the desktop computer that we had to like custom order from the store. And I listen to music, watch music videos on launch.com, and just look up random shit about movies. And I've got the wild hair up my ass one day to look up The Professional. And what I found out just like stopped me dead in my tracks. Apparently, the version of The Professional that got released here in the States was like edited from like the original release, which was like 15 to 20 minutes longer. And it was not called The Professional overseas. It was called Leon the Professional. All these like movie buffs and stuff or on message boards, like, you need to get a hold of this because the international version is way better than the one that got released here in the States. And back then it was like, holy shit, how do I get one of these copies of, you know, the international version of The Professional, Leon the Professional. And I remember, you know, going on eBay and seeing just outrageous prices for like an imported copy, like a imported laser disc, an imported VHS tape, which I do own, thanks to Jeffrey. He found one at Half Price Books for $5 and he gave it to me for my birthday. So that was your option, or you tracked down a decent bootleg of it that was dubbed onto VHS. And I didn't have an allowance and I didn't have any money, so that was out of the question. So I just had to keep dreaming and reading about it until Columbia Pictures released the international version on DVD, I think in 2000 2001, and I still have it. And I was like, holy shit, like this is incredible. This is the way it was meant to be seen. And I've bought it numerous times since. And it's definitely one of my favorite action movies in the 90s. 1995, another Sandler movie. Billy Madison. And the great thing about growing up with our mom was we didn't go see kids movies all the time. She's like, you know what? If I work really hard during the week to take you guys to the movies, and the movie has to be something I want to watch too. So with that, we got to see Billy Madison. And I felt like the luckiest kid on planet Earth, because, you know, all the other kids, their parents would not take them to go see that. That was a movie that the parents would go see and then rent it, be like, oh, it's not that bad. But my mom just didn't give a fuck. She's like, we're gonna go see this Billy Madison movie. And I remember my brother and I just laughing really hard. We were probably the only little kids in the theater, and it just blew us away because it was so funny. It was so off the wall, and it's still a movie I watch to this day and laugh my ass off at. And it's a movie still to this day that Jeff and I still quote. It's crazy. It had a huge impact on our comedy, like our senses of humor. So that's a very important movie. And yes, I like Billy Madison over Happy Gilmore. I mean, Happy Gilmore's no slouch, but Billy Madison for me is where it's at. 1996, another Tom Hanks movie, That Thing You Do. That should be self-explanatory. I mean, musician, I love movies. The movie's centered around pretty much the drummer. So that's why I love That Thing You Do. And I watched that a year ago, and I was just like, this is great. And I remember my mom went to go see it. She's like, that movie's terrible. I was like, what? Why? She's like, you hear that damn That Thing You Do song like repeatedly throughout the movie. I was like, well, that's what the movie's called. Like, it's called That Thing You Do, and that's their big hit. You have to hear that. And, you know, you watch that movie, and it's like, what, 90 minutes, 2 hours almost, and you never get tired of hearing that song. Incredible. I think it's one of the first things Tom Hanks directed, and that dude's got some directing chops. And he's an amazing writer, too. I mean, that story, how kind of the wonders could exist in that world of music in the 60s, was just genius. 97, very personal movie to me. Chasing Amy. I shouldn't really go into about Kevin Smith. I did an episode about him. So if you want to hear about why I think Kevin Smith is a genius, please listen to my Kevin Smith podcast. Just this is a very personal movie. The movie taught me a lot about relationships, you know, and the insecurities an individual will have during a relationship. Yeah, I'm not going to get any deeper because I feel like I'll get too personal and just probably turn everybody off. But yeah, I love that movie. And I also love, briefly, I'll explain why I love it too, outside of that, is Kevin Smith and Mallrats, which is my favorite Kevin Smith movie. And, you know, that movie didn't do well. And rather than just kind of whore himself out to do some big studio thing, he went back to the well and did an indie movie. And that's another reason why I love Chasing Amy. So Chasing Amy, 1997. 98, Can't Hardly Wait. I remember the first time I seen this movie. I think we had like Showtime or Cinemax at my mom's house, and it was like a mom and me weekend, and all we did was like go to the mall and watch movies. It was great. My mom probably still does go to bed early, but back then she'd go to bed at like 9:30 and 10. And I remember it was a Saturday night, and she's like, oh, you've got to watch this Can't Hardly Wait movie. It's on Cinemax at like 10:30 or Showtime, whatever we had. And I was like, oh, I don't know, Mom. Like, you know, it's got the Party of Five lady on it. And, you know, I'm just, you know, because at that point, I knew if, like, one of the main cast members was on, like, a show from the WB, it was probably going to be, like, every other movie that had a cast member from a WB show. And like at that point, I was starting to understand formulas and like movies and whatnot, like mainstream movies. And I was getting burned out at this point. So I was just like, I don't know. She's like, trust me, you'll love it. This is a you movie. So I was like, all right. And my mom to this day still doesn't steer me wrong when it comes to a movie. So I watched it and I was blown away. I was like, this is pretty intelligent for a teen movie, quotations. You know, I loved Ethan Embry's character of Preston. You know, I was like, if I actually tried in school, I could be Preston. Like, I identified with that character so much. And we've all had a crush. We've all had a crush like Amanda Beckett, you know, the popular girl, you know. And fun fact, because I imagine I'll probably do an episode about this or talk about it more and a future episode. Hopefully I get my brother Jeff to do that one with me. Fun fact, I did write a letter like Preston to a girl I had a crush on. I don't think she ever got it, but moving on. 1999, Detroit Rock City. I love Kiss Meets the Phantom for what it is, or Attack of the Phantoms, whichever version you prefer. But I felt Detroit Rock City was like a redemption film for that. I mean, I love how goofy and zany Meets the Phantom was, but I love how Detroit Rock City was kind of more up, you know, Kiss fans' alley. I mean, you know, these four kids want to go see Kiss. I mean, who doesn't want to go see Kiss? I seen Kiss for the first and sadly the last time at Sonic Temple, and it was amazing. I love the movie. It's so funny, and it was done so perfectly, you know. I mean, I talked about, I think, in the Stone Age episode that, you know, there was this fetish for the 70s and the 90s, pretty hardcore. And this is probably the last movie that got made in the 90s that did it really well. So I absolutely love it. I need to watch that again. And, like, when you're watching it in the cast, you're just like, oh, these guys are just fucking acting. I bought that these four guys were legit Kiss fans, and they are now, but, like, prior to that, I think only two of them liked Kiss. So, 2000, Almost Famous, and I identified with William Miller so much because I didn't want to be in fucking school. You know, I would have rather been like on the road with one of my favorite bands that I looked up to, and it hit home. And it's a love letter to music. You know, like I said, I love music, I love musicians, you know. And I remember on the car ride home, mom was just like, that guy was you. You are William Miller, you know. And I remember that was one of the few moments, you know, during my teenage years that, like, my mom got me. And so, like I said, I get kind of emotional when I talk about it. And, you know, I fucking love that movie, obviously, because I've talked about it numerous times. 2001, I got Donnie Darko. Somebody left a copy of this movie at our house and never came back for it. And I remember I was in my room and the DVD copy gets thrown on my bed. And I was like, what's this? Dad's like, oh, it was pretty fucking stupid, but I know you'll like it. And right before he goes back in the living room, he came back to my room. He's like, oh, they show clips of Evil Dead in the movie. So yeah, definitely check it out. I remember watching it and just being like, holy shit, what the fuck is this? And I remember, I think I watched it like three times that weekend to kind of get it. And everybody has a theory about Donnie Darko. Mine is, here's a guy who hated being a teenager so fucking much that he sacrificed himself for humanity. Pretty grim, you know. And it's definitely a movie I watch every year. The director's cut I really didn't enjoy all that much. I mean, it kind of added more to the story, but I'm kind of going through this thing now where I like the theatrical cut more than the director's cut, except for Almost Famous. The bootleg cut, I think, reigns supreme over the theatrical cut. Great fucking movie. 2002. Oh, I forgot I have another Adam Sandler movie. Punch Drunk Love. Loved Boogie Nights. Loved Magnolia. And Magnolia is this fucking, like, three-hour movie. It's a movie I can't explain, but somehow, like, it makes sense in my head. You know, it's kind of about life, and that's just all I can really say. It's about life. And it's funny, it was this three-hour movie, and somebody had bet Paul Thomas Anderson, the great Paul Thomas Anderson. I bet you can't do like a 90-minute romantic comedy. And he was like, game on, and did Punch Drunk Love. Now, prior to this, I knew Adam Sandler. I think everybody knew Adam Sandler as like the goofy comedic guy. And he was kind of starting to like weigh down in his comedic movies. I mean, Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, he was like this immature, like goofy dude. And then he started doing stuff like Big Daddy and The Wedding Singer, where he was just like, I'm going to grow up by the end of the movie. And then finally, he's just like, I want to do a serious movie. And he does Punch Drunk Love. And it's just incredible. It's still like a weird, quirky Paul Thomas Anderson movie. But it's just, it's amazing. If you've not seen it, please go see it. And this really kind of gave birth to Sandler's dramatic career. Still have never seen Rain Over Me. I loved Uncut Gems. I'm pretty sure he's done a couple more that is not coming to mind. And that's the thing, too, I tell people is people rip on him so bad because he's like the Netflix movie guy. They're like, oh, you do those cheap, fucking stupid comedy movies on Netflix. Dude, for every Hubie Halloween we get, he does. We're going to get an Uncut Gems. So you just got to be patient. You know, he's definitely a guy who caters to each one of his audiences. So Punch Drunk Love, 2002, PTA, check it out. 2003, House of a Thousand Corpses. I think the worst things I did as a teenager were drink occasionally, smoke cigarettes, and go sneak off and see movies I wasn't allowed to. But I remember I was standing at a friend's house. He's like, dude, try to stay another night. And I kind of wanted to avoid not staying another night at his house because I didn't want to go to church with him. And I was like, ah, dude, I don't know. I got to go mow the lawn. And that was total bullshit because like my dad didn't make me mow the lawn back in the day. He's like, dude, no, I'm going to see if my brother will take us to go see the Rob Zombie movie, House of a Thousand Corpses. I was like, no shit. So I called my dad and I was like, hey, can I stay at such and such's house for another night? He's like, yeah, sure. Dad had gotten a copy of it and was like, you can't see this movie. This is fucking gory. It's not for kids. And I remember seeing it. I saw it at the second run theater, the Dollar Theater. I remember being like one of 10 people that kind of weren't fazed by it. We were just blown away because I could just tell that like people that weren't too shocked about it by the movie were just Rob Zombie fans. And I was one of them. 2004, The Girl Next Door. I didn't have the greatest senior year. You know, let me paint you a picture. I was in high school. I was fat. I was quiet. I daydreamed a lot. And this movie kind of spoke to my daydreams. And it's probably pretty controversial now considering a porn star is hanging out with a teenager. But we didn't think about those things in 2004. And I think it's a really great movie, great morality tale. You know, it's something different. I mean, you can't really pitch a movie like The Girl Next Door and expect it to be a rom-com and like PG-13. I mean, there is kind of romantic comedy elements in it. But I just thought it was genius. I loved the movie. It was a blind buy. I remember going to Kmart when it was in my town and buying it and just falling in love with it. That's definitely one I need to revisit, obviously, because I didn't say too much about it. 2005, George A. Romero's Land of the Dead. I graduated high school and my summer was just filled with work. And I remember going to the movies to see Land of the Dead because Land of the Dead was released like nationwide theatrically. And it was the first and only movie of George A. Romero's that I've seen in the theater to this day. And that's why it's my pick. And I thought it was an amazing movie. I'm such a huge fan of the original Dead trilogy. Dawn's obviously my all-time favorite. Although people will want to question that because I got Night of the Living Dead tattooed on me. And I felt Land complemented those three films well. Especially, it was like an extension of Day. You know, just such an amazing film. I didn't really like the Dead movies that followed. I wish he would have stopped after this one. Honestly, I mean, Diary and Survival, I mean, they're okay. They're great. But I feel George should have stopped at Lamb. 2006, total game changer, Borat. I knew nothing about this movie at all. And I remember me and my girlfriend at the time were at my mom's house eating dinner. And she's like, we got to go see this Borat movie. And Jeff had already seen it, was telling us how great it was. So I remember we went up to the movie, to the Cineplex near where my mom used to live, and the theater was fucking packed. I was like, what is this movie? Because I hadn't heard of it. And it's still one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my entire life. So genius. And, you know, this is pre, like, smartphone, social media, internet wave. So that's why he got away with it. Just insane. Sacha Baron Cohen's a fucking genius. And that movie will never get old for me. Ever. I would like to see like the 4-hour cut of it. 2007, probably the last great teen comedy movie that's ever been made. Super Bad. It came out when I was 20. You know, I'd obviously been out of school a few years, and I felt like there was no movie that really kind of solidified like my age group, dad's, you know, age group. I mean, they had the Hughes movies and Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I felt we didn't have anything that great, but Superbad comes out. I'm like, you know what? That's pretty accurate. I knew guys that were like that. People, I should say, that were like that. Went and partied and did crazy adventurous things. And it's a rare movie because you're not going to get that now in a teen movie. Great movie. I watched that not too long ago. Still fucking funny. And it's still a movie I quote. 2008. We got a lot of comedies left here, so I hope you're ready. 2008, Tropic Thunder. I remember seeing this movie and thinking, like, this is one of the best movies I've ever seen. Like, shot from, like, how it was shot from a cinematography point of view. I mean, it was just crazy. You know, and I grew up watching, like, Full Metal Jacket, Platoon, and Apocalypse Now, and there was a movie that just totally made fun of the, you know, those movies in the process of it. Because, you know, I'm all about method acting, but sometimes you kind of have to scratch your head, like, you really went to boot camp? I mean, that's a good way to understand the character that you're playing, but sometimes you just kind of like, you did? So, great movie. 2009, Observe and Report. I reconnected with somebody from my past who is now my best friend. We went on a date, and I was like, let's go see that new Seth Rogen movie, Observe and Report. You know, Seth Rogen's a funny guy, and I remember we went, and on the way, I took her home. She's like, that wasn't funny. That was depressing. And little did I know that, you know, it was directed by Jody Hill. I'd become the hugest fan of Eastbound and Down, which he's responsible for. Definitely an underrated Seth Rogen movie. I mean, it's funny for the wrong reasons. It's a black comedy, essentially. I mean, it's about this guy who just has mental health issues. He's a security guard at a mall, and like, he goes off as fucking rocker, man. I mean, it's a great film. I love Observe and Report. Not the most positive movie, but still a good one. 2010, The Other Guys. Will Ferrell's a fucking genius in this. How him and Mark Wahlberg and even Michael Keaton play off each other. Insane. Another movie I quote to this day. That's kind of one of the reasons why I picked the movies that I did. I was like, if I quote the movie, it's definitely going on the list. I watched that not too long ago. I had a huge, like, Will Ferrell, like, marathon. I love Will Ferrell. He's one of my comedic idols. So yeah, definitely probably one of his best movies. An underrated Will Ferrell movie, however, is Semi-Pro. 2011, Drive, and I did an entire episode about that. I actually watched that for like the fourth time this year. I probably should go get help. Love that movie. 2012, Silver Linings Playbook. I bought this as a blind buy during Black Friday at Walmart. And I was like, it's probably not great or whatever, but hell, it's $5. I'll watch it. Fucking genius. You know, solid cast. 2013, Wolf of Wall Street. Oh my God. Probably the best theatrical experience I've ever had. I remember seeing that movie on a weekday. I think it was in its second week of its theatrical showing. Exhibition, I'm sorry. And I was the only person at theater laughing. I think I horrified everybody else. And the audience was pretty much made up of like older couples. And older couples and like their kid that came back home from school. And I was the only one laughing. I terrified people. I sensed that like that guy should not be laughing at this shit. Just, I love movies that are chaotic and there's no rhyme or reason for the chaos that's going on in the movie. And that's a great example of it. And God, one of Scorsese's best, I feel. And I don't want to talk too much about that because I do plan on doing a Scorsese episode. So stay tuned for that. I was actually working on that before I took a hiatus. 2014, Boyhood. I love Richard Linklater. What an innovative way to make a movie about growing up. For those of you that don't know, he made a movie over the span of 12 years with the same cast. He would wait till they grew older, or there's kids in the movie, till they grew up a little bit, shoot some footage, and then just, he did that for 12 years, and finally, he put it all together and became Boyhood. Genius, great movie, and one of Linklater's best. 2015, the Vacation reboot, National Lampoon. I wasn't expecting much. I love the original National Lampoon's Vacation. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. I wasn't expecting much, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, you know, Ed Helms and Christina Applegate, I think are going to do really awesome. I feel it's the best example of passing the torch to the next generation in cinema. I'm kind of upset it didn't do that well, so we don't have, like, another stretch of vacation movies. I love all the vacation movies. And what I'm about to say next is sacrilegious, but just hear me out. Not huge on the Christmas Vacation. It's a great movie. It's funny, but not huge on it. You know, for me, it's the first Vacation. Absolutely love that movie. I'll have to go Vegas Vacation, even though not too many people like that one. I thought it was pretty funny. European Vacation, I thought was amazing. And Christmas, that's how I rank them. I'm sorry if I upset anybody. I know Christmas Vacation's a time-honored classic. 2017, The Disaster Artist. I had no idea about The Room at all. That totally slipped my radar. And then I want to say Jeff's like, dude, you got to watch The Disaster Artist. This movie's great. Probably the best movie James Franco will ever do. Oh, man. I think The Disaster Artist movie is better than The Room. And another reason I love that movie is just, like, you have to champion Tommy Wiseau. You really have to. I mean, that The Room's not a great movie, but for him, it's the best piece of cinema. You know, there's several people out there that will rip on movies, myself included, and not make one. Tommy Wiseau fucking made one. 2018, mid-90s, I think Jonah Hill hit it out of the park. And it was done so well. I mean, didn't grow up around skateboarders. I sure as fuck, my fat ass didn't fucking skateboard back in the 90s. But somehow he captured the 90s perfect. Like, the aesthetic. Like, I remember the 90s very well, because, you know, I was a little kid. And somehow it just took me back, because I remember most of that shit. You know, the only thing I really didn't identify with was skateboarding. That's what the movie's about. So, does more movies, because I think he's a great director. And when you're going to Marty Scorsese for film advice, and he's giving you, like, the just thumbs up, like, do this, kid. I mean, you're going to go somewhere. 2019, shouldn't be a surprise. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. My all-time favorite movie, my favorite Tarantino movie. That movie for me reignited my love for films, because prior to that I was just kind of like drifting out of, you know, movies, you know, buying, watching. I just kind of was drifting out. Then I seen that movie and it just reignited my love for him. I started buying them, I started watching them more, you know. And, you know, I have to give credit where credit's due. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is one of the reasons why I have a movie podcast. You know, I love movies. I love talking about them so much. And I'm fortunate there's a few people out there that enjoy hearing me talk about movies. So thank you. Thank you to the audience. And thank you to Mr. Quentin Tarantino for making such a masterpiece. And while we're talking about Tarantino, I should just touch on the subject. He's going to start making his last movie, The Movie Critic, in the fall. I think it's not going to be as... Or it might be. He has a way of surprising his audience, which I love. I don't think it's going to be epic and grand like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I think he's going to end on a high note, and it's going to be great. He did a full-blown 60s movie with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I think he's going to make like an all-out 70s movie with The Movie Critic. I can't wait to see it. I will definitely be buying advanced screening ticket. 2020? I'm actually going to change it. I had The King of Staten Island, which I loved, but I think I'm going to change it to Bill and Ted Face the Music. That one hit hard for me because, you know, when I was a kid, Bill and Ted were my heroes. You know, and you could be Bill and Ted. I mean, the personality is not like you hang out in front of the Circle K and some guy's like, we can go back in time in this phone booth kind of thing. But the personalities, you could be those guys. And that's something I really gravitated towards as a kid. And, you know, that summer, I mean, that year wasn't good for anybody. You know, I was dealing with a lot of hard shit that summer in my life. And that was definitely the light at the end of the tunnel for me, was I was going to be able to see this Bill and Ted movie. I'd been waiting 30 years to see this movie, and I was going to be able to sit at home, you know, with my family and watch it. And it was wonderful. I got choked up a few times because I just could not believe I was seeing Bill and Ted again. It was like my old friends came up to check up on me, and I absolutely loved it. And they checked up on me at a time I needed the most. Great, great movie. 2021 Licorice Pizza. That was the first episode of this podcast, you know, I did a year ago. Happy anniversary. I'm not going to talk too much about it because, like I said, an episode about it. It was the first episode, and I do want to revisit that one and redo it again because I feel like I could do it better. I record these like multiple times because I'm just never satisfied, and I always want to try to give the best effort I can with these because, you know, people take time out of the day to listen to these, and I want it to make it worth it to the listener, and I want to be so comprehensive that it's kind of stressful. So that's why it takes me a while to record one of these. So I put a lot of pressure on myself. I'm my toughest critic, I feel, along with my audience. 2022, I did Weird, and I don't really need to say too much about that because I did an episode about it. I just thought it was really cool that he totally parodied the biopic. And like I said, I did an episode about it. Please check it out. See, this episode's not only a rebranding, but it's also kind of like a promo reel for my former episodes. So 2023, I did the movie Air, directed by Ben Affleck. I thought that was an incredible fucking movie. I think Ben Affleck is a phenomenal director. He did a wonderful job with us. Matt Damon delivers a killer performance. For those of you that don't know, it's the movie about how the Air Jordans came about, Nike's, you know, rise to fame, if you will. The one thing I really did like about it was it wasn't nostalgia overkill. You know, we live in a time now where like somebody makes a movie about the 80s or the 90s, and it's just like, let me fit as much shit from that decade as I can into one frame and just make it overkill. With Air, you didn't have that. It was very appropriate. The soundtrack was pretty awesome from what I remember. So I highly recommend checking Air out. Great film. Another great Ben Affleck movie. I mean, let's not forget the guy did Argo. Fucking Michael Keaton be Batman again was kind of odd. I compare it to somebody that like kind of abandons you, and then they come back with good intentions, and you just don't know how to take them. That's kind of how I felt. I know that's harsh, but that's how I felt because, you know, in 94, 95, 93 maybe, I remember like watching the news, and like there was this press release about Michael Keaton's like, I'm not coming back for Batman 3. Neither is Tim Burton. So I was like, okay with that. Cause I was like, you know, we've got Batman and Batman Returns. I mean, we don't really need a whole slew of movies. I mean, I was kind of bummed, but I was just like, all right, it is what it is. And then, you know, Val Kilmer ended up becoming Batman and Batman Forever. And I was like, hell yeah, my guy. Cause I was a huge advocate for Val Kilmer for some reason, because he was fucking Batman. I was having this battle about the multiverse and shit. And hell, I'm probably wrong about the scenario. And they flash to the Nicolas Cage Superman, and he's fighting a giant spider. My mouth dropped because, you know, if you are a Kevin Smith fan like me, you'll remember that story he told in one of his Q&A DVDs about the producer of Superman, the Superman movie that he was supposed to do, wanting a giant spider to fight Superman. And I was like, holy shit, they finally put that in a fucking movie. It lives on in cinema now. It's not just lived vicariously in Wild Wild West. I thought that was pretty cool. Got to see Helen Slater, Supergirl, kind of like the CGI kind of thing. Christopher Reeve, which I ended up rewatching the first two Superman movies. Not bad. I don't really feel it should have bombed at the box office. You know, I mean, fucking Keaton was in it. And of course, the surprise Batman at the end, I'm not going to reveal. The other one is Evil Dead Rises. My Jeff and I had a conversation about this last night, and it was pretty inventive. You know, the movie takes place in an apartment building, which is a far cry from like a cabin in the woods. You know, there's a whole lot of things you can play with in an apartment building as opposed to like the woods and a cabin. I thought that was pretty inventive. But the thing that I don't understand about Evil Dead, and maybe somebody out there can help me out with this, is why are they trying to reboot it? Like, I don't get it. Like, they tried in 2013, 2014, and then they're trying now. Like, I don't get it, because, like, the new horror fans are such big fans of the original Evil Dead. They love those three movies, and they also love the TV show. I don't get it, you know? And another thing that really bothered me about the Evil Dead Rises was I feel anytime somebody gets attached to do, like, an Evil Dead movie, they feel like they have to be Sam Raimi. I mean, it wasn't terrible. I love seeing the gore, though. I will say that the gore in it was really good. I think the only time you actually see gore in cinema is not in a studio film, is in a A24 movie. And that was another thing I told Jeff last night, too, was like, I think the majors should leave horror films to Jordan Peele and A24. I recommend giving it a watch. I think that'll do it for this episode. Thank you, everybody, and until next time.